Empower Radio presents The Miracle of Healing with Lisa Campion. Meet healers, learn different modalities, and hear empowering stories of people on their healing journey. The Miracle of Healing on Empower Radio. Here's your host, Lisa Campion.
Hello, I'm Lisa Campion, and this is The Miracle of Healing on Empower Radio, where conscious people come together to explore the world of healing and heal the planet, one person at a time. We have a guest today. I'm super excited to talk about his book. His name is Mark Coleman, and he wrote this amazing book called From Suffering to Peace, The True Promise of Mindfulness. And he also wrote another book called Make Peace with Your Mind. And Mark has a really interesting background of having come from kind of a, you know, an angry, antisocial youth in East London, and finding mindfulness as a way to find inner peace, which it certainly seems like he's done. He's the founder of the Mindfulness Institute and has an MA in clinical psychology, and is also really into guiding people into wilderness experiences as a wilderness guide. And I'm so happy that you're on the show with us today, Mark Coleman. Thanks for being here.
Yeah, very happy to be here. Thanks for having me on the show.
Yeah. So tell us, I mean, I was so interested in your story about how you came into mindfulness and kind of the way that you got into it as a lucky, as you said in your book, a lucky time to kind of squat in a someplace that had a Buddhist connection to it. Can you tell us about that, how you got there?
Yeah. So, yeah, I was at college. I was a young punk, and it was a big part of the punk scene was squatting houses and taking over, you know, helping people get off the streets. And so I was part of that movement and ended up, as you said, squatting a Buddhist housing association property. And I got to know them. They're Buddhist. They didn't kick me out. They were nice. And they said, oh, you should check out meditation. We have this, you know, class around the corner. And, you know, back then in the 80s, meditation, aside from TM, which you mentioned, was pretty obscure. And it was sort of considered culty and weird. And but I went in and they had classes on mindfulness and loving kindness, which is a lovely complementary practice, and of opening the heart. And it was, you know, radical for me to close my eyes and be instructed to turn my attention inwards towards my own mind and my thoughts and my habits and mental tendencies and all of that. And was just, you know, was much more revolutionary. It was the inner revolution rather than the outer revolution. Mm-hmm. And captivated me. And it's been a lifelong pursuit since then. I dropped out of college. I went to Asia. I studied with many, many teachers, and at some point, you know, 15, 20 years in, started teaching, and I've been teaching the last 20 years, really just sharing my love of the practice and sharing my love of how transformative it is.
Yeah, that's an incredible story. And I mean, when you were talking about luck would have it, I don't know if that was luck. It seems like it really, there's some divine purpose there, since it put you on such a powerful path.
Right. Yes. I mean, we call them accidents or synchronicities or whatever we call them. But yes, it was certainly seems to be, looking back, seems to be destined at this point.
Yeah. And I know that you write in your book about wanting to, you know, sort of have an opportunity to continue to define the word mindfulness, because that's a word that means a lot of different people, a lot of different things to a lot of different people. And there may be some, I don't know, confusion or misconceptions about that word. So I thought that would be a good place to start. Can you tell me what it really means to you?
Sure. The simple definition for me, mindfulness, is clear awareness. And the longer definition of that is mindfulness is the capacity to be aware of our physical, mental, emotional, energetic, and environmental experience with clarity, with curiosity, and in service of understanding and developing insight about ourselves and our habits and our tendencies. So it's really, a radial awareness that allows us to know knowing what's happening as it's happening in our experience. In order to understand ourselves, and in particular, since I'm trained in the Buddhist tradition, that orientation or that intention is to really understand how do we create and add to our own suffering, and how do we create and add and support our well-being and happiness and peace. And so that through that self-understanding and understanding our mind and our habits and reactions and patterns, we can deeper insight into the deeper reality, we can find profound peace and freedom from our reactive nature.
That's great. I was thinking about it when you posed the question in your book, and I was trying to think, well, what does it mean to me? And I think it meant trying hard to stay as present in the moment as possible as I can with what's happening in the moment, on all the levels, and all the levels of my being. And it certainly does take a lot of practice, because...
Right. Life isn't easy.
No, life isn't easy. And I have some funny experiences with meditation myself. Like I told you before we started the show that my parents were hippies, and I grew up outside Boston, and they took me to transcendental meditation when I was 10, because that's what you did when you were a hippie in 1974. And I learned transcendental meditation, which is it's a great meditation practice. And so I have, I think for a Westerner, a really unusual predilection for meditation. Like I've been doing it for so long, and I had this other cool experience of, I studied martial arts. I was a martial artist when I was at university, and afterwards I went to Japan. I wanted to keep studying that, and I found the one guy who was in this tiny little town in Japan I lived in who was a martial artist, happened to be in my style, and the favorite star pupil of the master of my school, and he was also a Zen Buddhist monk, and he would have us do zazen from 5 in the morning to 6 in the morning. If we wanted to train in the dojo at night, we had to do that. It was hardcore. I was like 20, I don't know, 2 or something like this, and I'm having this like super intense, and it was like on the floor, on your knees in seiza, no mats, no zabutons, no cushions, and right. he had the stick. He'd walk around, and I think in some ways it was such an incredible experience for me, because he would give instruction in Japanese. I could never understand what he was saying. So talk about beginner mind. Like I had no idea what the instruction was. I was really left to my own, And then if you fall asleep, you get the whack on the shoulder with the stick.
Yeah, that's hardcore.
Like I've totally right. I've had these like, very strange, but I think that experience like cemented the need for meditation that I have in some way, even though I couldn't understand what he was saying. It was a cool experience.
Well, it's funny because we share my original introduction to meditation was transcendental meditation when I was 16. My father was recommended to go because he was really stressed and they were concerned about his health. And so, as I mentioned back then, there wasn't much going around, and TM was the main doorway. And I think it's been the doorway for so many people, and it's a great practice. It's a great concentration practice and calming and soothing. And for me, the limitation with that was it didn't really translate so well for me in terms of, how do I then be, that present when I'm in conversation or when I'm on the bus or when I'm at my desk or when I'm getting triggered? And so one of the things I've appreciated about mindfulness practice is, it's really one of those, it's mindfulness is part of our own nature. And so it goes with us everywhere. The more we cultivate awareness and attention through mindfulness, then the more that is available to us when we're, dealing with stressful situations and dealing with, challenges of the body and relationships and whatnot. So it's
Yeah. I was so struck when it seems so obvious, but I really don't think I ever really realized this until I was reading your book, that mindfulness comes in sort of two flavors. One of them is practice, like when we're doing meditation, and the other is as we're just out and about in our life. And I know it sounds crazy, but I don't know if I ever really thought that that was two separate things until I read your book. And that's a bit how you've organized your book, isn't it?
Right. Yeah. I think of practice, you know, sitting meditation is sort of like the laboratory of the mind, where we, you know, we remove distractions and we're sitting pretty much just sitting with ourselves and paying attention to our experience. And that is a very powerful way to train, to get to know our mind and heart and body, and to cultivate presence and awareness and all kinds of other meditative qualities. And then we have the rest of our life. And for most people, the rest of our life will always be, you know, so much greater than any time we spend formally meditating. And so it's important that we learn how to translate and what I call integrated practices.
Right.
And so that, you know, and there's lots of practices in the book, whether it's mindful walking or mindful eating, or just, you know, bringing that awareness of our emotional reactivity or mindful listening and conversation, and many, many ways to cultivate this quality of attention in our lives. Because the more that we do that, the more we deepen this quality. And so the meditation supporting that happening in your life and happening, doing that in your life, is supporting that also in your meditation.
I really like how you broke it down into like finding peace in your body, finding peace in your mind, in the heart, and finding peace in the world. That was great. Tell me what inspired you to break it down that way.
Yeah, well, you know, partly from just my training, you know, the those areas of our life, you know, that I wanted to explore different ways the practice of mindfulness impacts in a very real way. And, you know, the main domains of our experience is our physical experience, our emotional landscape, the heart and the emotions and moods, and then our mental landscape, the mind, thoughts, views, ideas, judgments, etc. And then how we relate to the rest of the world and each other. And so I wanted to explore in a very concrete way how mindfulness really helps illuminate and helps us understand each of these facets of our being. And they're all important. You know, mindfulness of body is considered sort of the ground, it's the foundation. And the more that we're oriented to our body, the more we're one in the present moment, and we're privy to this whole rich array of information. The body holds a lot of wisdom, holds the emotions, it holds intuition.
Right.
And so if we can learn to stay grounded in the body, that's, you know, fantastic. And then, of course, we need to also understand the mind, because the mind is really where so much of our both joy and suffering arise from. And so mindfulness is a powerful, you know, awareness gives us that powerful tool to really see and clarify our mental habits and tendencies, see which ones are constructive, like, you know, cultivating appreciation and gratitude, versus ones that are destructive, like the comparing mind and the judging mind. And the same with the heart. You know, most people are not so familiar with or comfortable with the full range of our emotional experience, you know, whether it's sorrow or ecstasy or grief or love. You know, I've worked as a therapist and as a coach and as a meditation teacher, and you know, I've seen this time and time again. People are very comfortable in their minds and not so comfortable in their bodies. And if they're not comfortable in their bodies, there's not that fluency with awareness of their emotional landscape. And of course, if we're not that emotionally aware, then we lack that emotional intelligence.
All right.
So mindfulness
is great.
Supported.
I loved it. And I know for myself, like, I feel if I'm out of sync, you know, if I'm not having a mindful experience in the moment, I feel it first in my body, you know, like I feel uncomfortable. I feel that, you know, twisty or tummy flips, like I feel it in my stomach usually. And that's become such a, you know, symbol for me, like, all right, something's not right. I need to pay attention and figure out what's going on. Like, what am I having an emotion? Am I having a thought? Am I feeling it? Like, what's happening here? And I do the same thing when I'm training intuitives and psychics, which is a lot of what I do, is training them to really be starting in the body and be grounded in the body, because I think it all starts from there.
Right. Absolutely. Now, the body is you know, it's always available. Always present for,
can be
present.
And we get so out of it, especially as Westerners. I think we're trained to ignore it and not be in there very much.
For sure, you know, especially with technology, you know, sitting for 8-9 hours looking at a screen all day, and then coming home and watching a screen all day, you know, the body is almost a completely absent experience unless it's hungry, you know, or tired. So, you know, mindfulness is actually re-inviting us back into our body and living with an embodied awareness. You know, I teach a lot of my meditation work in nature, and, you know, so being aware and alive through the senses is just such a beautiful way to connect with the natural world. And so, you know, again, mindfulness helps that because it encourages us to be in our bodies, to inhabit our bodies.
Yeah, I had I did a lot of time when I was younger in the wilderness. I did this course, I was about 18, through this in the National Outdoor Leadership School. It's in wilderness training, kind of, they teach outdoor skills. Yeah. And it was amazing. It was an amazing experience, especially to do it so young. And it was 3 weeks in the Wind Rivers in Wyoming.
Oh,
and we were hiking. It was old school. Like, this is way before GPS. We had, like, you know, survey maps, and we were hiking off trail most of the time. And it was long, like 8 hour hiking days. And hiking is such a mindful experience because not much is happening. It's kind of like the scenery doesn't change that quickly. Like, you're really lost in your thought. People don't talk after a little while, you know? And it was one of my most powerful early mindfulness experiences. And I know for you, it's been such an incredible thing. Can you tell us a little bit about how you got into that and what that's been like for you?
Yeah. So yeah, my meditation and nature work has definitely become a primary part of my work these days. So I grew up in England, and there's not much wildness left in England and not much in Europe. And so when I came to the States in the early 90s, I just fell in love with the wilderness and the vastness and the wildness. There's so much undeveloped land here. And so I started to spend more time outside, hiking, backpacking, camping. And then I started to meditate more outside because it was just so, so captivating, and then started doing my own meditation retreats outside for myself. And at some point, I realized I wanted to start sharing that work, because I realized that all of the insights and the understandings that I'd learned from various wisdom traditions about interconnection and awareness and love and impermanence and, you know, many, many things that are, you know, suffused in the wisdom traditions of Buddhism and Hinduism and others, that they were very accessible. Those same understandings and insights of selflessness and impermanence and interdependence were just so naturally, you know, apparent in nature. And so I began teaching probably about 15 years ago, and then that spawned my first book, Awaken the Wild. And then since then I've been leading retreats, you know, from Alaska to Peru and across the Western states in America, just integrating mindfulness and nature and meditation and silence. And they're very, very powerful, beautiful ways both to learn meditation and also to connect very deeply with, nature and also with oneself. So highly, highly recommend them.
Yeah, that's great. I'm curious is also to admire how you can do these long silent meditations. I've never been brave enough to do it. I'm a little afraid of seasons meditator. Like, I, you know, and I've never done one. And I'm a bit afraid of it, really.
Uh-huh. You mean long, like a week long or a 10 day?
Yeah. I'm afraid I'd go crazy. I'm afraid I wouldn't be able to do it.
Uh-huh. Yeah, well, you know, they're surprisingly easy, and they're surprisingly much easier than you'd think. People, it's the thing I hear the most, like, oh, the silence, I couldn't stay silent for more than a day, I'd freak out. And it's actually really not, it's like unremarkably easy in that, for example, you know, maybe you're sick and you're home alone, you know, for a day, or maybe you decide to go to the beach for a day and there's nobody there and you spend the day alone in silence. It's not something that different from what we already do.
Right.
And because everybody else is in silence and the container is there, then it actually becomes very, very straightforward. And actually, it's a very beautiful, rich experience. And so it's just delightful to actually not have to engage in social chit chat and small talk and all of that. And it becomes a relief. And then at some point it just becomes very relaxing, and the stillness, the silence is opens the heart and the mind into much more deeper receptivity, whether it's to nature, to oneself, to silence, to mystery. And I know a lot of your work is around, you know, a deep listening and a deep attunement and a sensitivity. And so the silence is just allows that much more space to happen.
Yeah. I wonder if I should try it. I mean, I like to be alone, and in silence doesn't really bother me. I think it's the thought of unplugging from my life, like from my business, my, you know, email, my, you know, the trappings of my life that sort of propel me from day to day that are so burdensome, but also really occupy, like create the structure of my life. That's the part I was like, I think the world, I feel like my world would explode if I checked out of it for 10 days and just was quiet and didn't.
Right.
You know, that, maybe that means I really need to do it.
Yeah. Yes, I think it does actually. And I think, you know, we're all at this point pretty addicted to either it's to busyness, to being plugged in, to being connected. Yeah. And even though we might, you know, complain about email and Facebook or whatever it is we're into, we're also, it's quite, you know, they're built to be addictive. And
yes,
when we give ourselves permission to let them go, it's a profound relief. I mean, you'll after a day, you'll be like, oh, I don't ever go back to email ever again. It's a certain kind of freedom and a spaciousness. And it's really important that we learn to give ourselves that gift, because then we see, oh my God, I'm actually really sucked into this whole paradigm that's actually not that helpful ultimately for my mind and my heart and my well-being.
Yeah, it's a crazy paradigm. And, you know, as an author and an entrepreneur and, you know, like constantly pushing my business to get to the next level, which on one hand I like, but on the other hand, it's exhausting. Like,
right.
I was thinking just today that sort of like the hamster wheel analogy came to my mind. And I'm like, wow, when your life starts feeling like the hamster wheel, maybe it's a sign that you need a break. So,
right. Yes, yeah. Definitely. Yeah. So highly encourage you to explore that and highly encourage your listeners if you're feeling the same, because, you know, this is a very common experience these days. We're all, you know, often not all, but often very busy and very plugged in and hard to disconnect. And, you know, the net effect on us is, you know, really not so healthy.
No, I don't think it is. I can feel it in myself, like the stress and the strain and, you know. And I wonder, like, what's it for, you know, like, and I wonder if I think there's a little fear, like if I unplugged from it, would the illusion that's important go away? And then what would I do with, like, what does that mean for my life? Like, it has a bigger,
right,
you know, implication.
Yeah, no, I think these are really good inquiries and really, you know, and until we unplug from these things, we don't actually see the extent of how deeply they're embedded and you know, when we get to feel like, you know, when I'm often in the wilderness, so I have a week where I'm, you know, unplugged, no technology, no Wi-Fi, no signal anywhere. And there's a relaxation, there's an ease, there's a spaciousness, the nervous system unwinds, the sleep improves, you know, just the whole psyche has more space. We're not cluttering it either with feeds or emails or browsing.
I think you've got me sold. I think I need to do it.
Yeah, good.
I'll be checking your calendar for a retreat.
All right. All right. And then so, tell your listeners of the virtue of it.
I sure will. And so, Mark, how can people find you if they want to buy your book or find a retreat?
Sure. So my main website is my name, markcoleman.org. That's M-A-R-K, Coleman, C-O-L-E-M-A-N.org. And that lists my retreats and my books and talks and audio and all kinds of things on there. I run teacher trainings and mindfulness teacher trainings and nature teacher trainings. So all of that information can be found on my website. And you can find information about the book and order that from Amazon or the usual distributors, hopefully your local bookstore. And I have a whole program of wilderness meditation retreats, as I say, all across, you know, California and Mexico, and kayaking and hiking, and in Colorado, New Mexico.
Oh God, I'm signing up. I want to do one.
Good. Well, you'll love them.
Yeah. I'll need it. I need it. Yeah. Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Mark, for sharing this beautiful stuff that you've done. I love your book. From Suffering to Peace, The True Promise of Mindfulness. You guys check it out. And thank you, Mark, for being with us today.
Okay. Great to be on the show. Take care.
And thank all of you guys for joining me today on Empower Radio. You can find me at lisacampion.com and find me on Empower Radio, where we are healing the planet one person at a time.